during the sound pushing 16, one week in particular, we were up night and day, and only got about 2 hours sleep a week, or a night, rather, from what we could steal on our own.
You were a day shift worker, could be called out at night.
Oh, yes.
To help with a convoy.
That's right. There was very, very seldom a convoy or an evacuation occurred during the day, which meant that those on night duty were more fortunate in being able to get a nice rest. But the unfortunate part of that was, when we come off at 7 o'clock in the morning, we wanted a little recreation, which meant we might probably went out and had a game of soccer or a game of baseball. The consequence was we were so wide awake we couldn't sleep. And it was a heck of a job the following night to keep awake.
How many people would be on each shift, orderlies then?
Oh, during the day, in the ward I was on, which was surgical, there's one orderly and one light duty patient during the day, two nursing sisters. On the night shift, one nursing sister and one orderly. And if the ward was full, he had as much as 50 cases to look after. So, look at that, if the committee can't be hopping.
It's a lot of work.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Well, who would you play basketball or soccer with?
Amongst ourselves, just fooling around.
Oh, the orderlies from each ward?
Those were available, yes.
How many wards altogether at the first general hospital?
Oh, gosh, now you're asking me something that... it must have been about 10 or 12.
10 or 12 wards.
Rows of the wards, yes. It'd be about 10 or 12 rows, I imagine, altogether.
Of three tents each.
Of three marquees each.
Right. Mm-hmm. What, you also assisted in the operating room.
Well, that was after the first bombing. There's a number of the boys either knocked out completely or wounded. Consequence is they didn't have many original CAMC in the unit because we used to get a lot of help from light duty patients. Consequently, the sergeant major asked me if I would like to come in the operating room. I said yes. I was quite pleased to be considered. And I said, it's something I've been looking forward to for a long time. So, from then on until the armistice, I was connected with the operating room section.
Could you give a brief description of the procedures that were used in the operating room?
Well, it really all depended on the individual case. Naturally, they used the x-rays. To a great extent. Then the orderlies, it was two orderlies working together. We prepared the case for the operating room, for the operating room table. And then we assisted also with the case, if necessary. Invariably there was one, sometimes two nurses helping, one anesthetist. The anesthetist was also capable of surgery, doing surgery. Then there was a surgeon doing the operation. And in those days, means of putting a person under anesthetic was used by ether. Either it was the main antiseptic you are, the main item used in those days for putting you under. And although the equipment we had, which is rather obsolete compared to today, we used iodine mostly for antiseptic. And instead of using a pair of tweezers and picking up a piece of cotton wool and dipping it in the bowl and swabbing the area for the operation, we wouldn't have time for that. We'd just grab a piece of wool in our fingers, dip it in, and swab the area for the operation. Consequence was, you're never able to get that iodine out of your fingers. And when you're eating, all you could taste was iodine.
It must have been during
very antiquated.
During a major battle, there must have been a real assembly line.
Yes, there's a procedure. There was the battalion outpost, first aid station in the trenches, stretcher bearers. They were responsible for picking up the casualties, going up and locating them, and doing what they could for them at that particular time, according to their severity of the casualty, and bring them into the first aid station. Then they were transferred from there through the trenches and overland, if possible, to the casualty clearing station. I'm not too familiar as to how far that would be back from the front line. And that would be the first human means of handling a casualty. They did what they could for them there. They were operated on if it was urgent, as much as possible, and bandaged and attended to, then transferred from there down to the base hospital. And the base hospital, of course, ETAPS wasn't the only base hospital. There was also base hospitals at Belong, which was about 20 or 25 miles further up the coast from ETAPS. They handled a lot of cases there, too.
When the final offensive started, the field or the general hospitals moved up behind the armies.
Yes, the casualty clearance stations, as they were able to advance to, particularly toward the latter end of the conflict, trying to move the casualty clearing stations as close as possible to the wherever the action was, but within a reasonable distance whereby they could work under a certain amount of security and not have to be worried about getting bombed. And I might relate when ETAPS were first bombed, the only indication we had to show from the air was a Geneva flag flying over the hospital. And after the first raid, the Daily Mail from England, from London, sent over dirigibles to take pictures of the results of the first raid. Then these pictures were posted in the Daily Mail, which was a means of stirring up
anti-German
morale in the home front. And then they had an engineering squad come up, and the ETAPS was an area where there was sand and limestone. So they managed to get a lot of limestone and some old red brick, and they laid out a red cross in a circle. In between the cross was the white limestone, and it was made out in a large circle, must have been about 20 or 25 feet in diameter. and which made it very visible from the air in the event of future rains. But they didn't take any particular notice of that. And through the grapevine, we heard that the reason the hospital was bombed, because the Germans were aware of the fact that there were combatant troops and non-combatant troops, including the hospitals, in the same area. And they were aiming at cutting the bridge across the water, the stream, from the hospital to the main section of the base. They did hit it once, but it was repaired in practically no time at all. Therefore, they were able to get through, and then apparently their objective was to try and bomb the combatant area, which it didn't work out that way.
Yeah. How many raids were there roughly altogether?
Well, there was quite a few, but they never came over unless it was a moonlight night. And if they didn't come over by 11 o'clock, we turned in. But to prevent and to eliminate as many casualties as possible, those on day duty were taken, marched out, and we slept in the sand dunes away from the hospital. The nursing sisters were accommodated in an old castle about a mile away from the hospital, and was compulsory for all those not on duty to be away from the danger area. And I might mention, Jim, that in the first raid, or second raid, he even bombed the hospital, which meant there was a lot of casualties amongst the patients. So it meant, and you can understand, realize the courage that the nurses' sisters had to have to keep up the morale of the patients during these raids, was really wonderful. And from then on, they had a working battalion come up. They fortified the area all around the wards, built up about a 3 or 4 foot wall, and banked it with dirt and soil on the outside. In the event that during the raid a bomb dropped between the wards, there'd be a certain amount of protection for those in the beds.
I see. Mm-hmm. We've got enough tape, I guess, for one last question or observation. Is there anything that you'd like to add? I know you have a lot of stories. Is there anything?
Well, I would like to go in. Well, I can really relate a story whereby when I was up at the casualty stations, I couldn't get any parcels. My leave came due while I was up there. I couldn't get it until I got back to the base. And eventually I got to know the ropes as to how to handle the situation from where we were in Harfleur. I had to go through, belong through the embarkation camp and the leave camp. So to avoid having to go through that, and I hung on to the train, and every stop we came to, invariably there was a military police come through the train to rustle out anyone going on leave weren't entitled to be going in that direction. However, anytime I got the indication, and I was acquainted with a couple of French soldiers who were going on leave, I gave them one of the cakes I had with me, and they were tickled to death to think this had come from Canada. Therefore, they reciprocated by giving me some French wine to drink. And in the meantime, while the MPs were going through the train, I went into the toilet area and locked the door till they'd gone. Therefore, I was able to get up into Paris and spend 2 days leaving Paris before I started my official leave to go over to Ireland, Belfast. But it's a long story, so I won't go into too in any detail regarding it.
Well, the tape's just about run out.
Right. Well, as a conclusion, Jim, I am really happy to be here in the Memorial Pavilion and meet one of my acquaintances that I went overseas with, which in the meantime was 61 years ago, and we never run into either one of us, never came in contact with us until we were both located here in Memorial Pavilion, a month apart.
Well, it's a small world.
Sure is. However, I'm very, very happy here.